At British Airways, we're recruiting in our ground operations team at London Heathrow. You'll have bags of responsibility as a valued colleague below the wing of our aircraft. Every touchdown and takeoff would not be possible without our brilliant team. So this is your chance to make a real difference and showcase your original skills and talents. New joiners will receive a £1,000 sign-on bonus, along with staff travel benefits from day one. Plus, we offer world-class training and career development opportunities. Bonus terms and conditions apply. Visit ba.com/careers and apply now.
V1.
Pull up. Pull up. Pull up. Terrain. Terrain. Pull up. Terrain.
Welcome to the Flight Safety Detectives. Hosts John Golia and Greg Fife, two of the world's most respected aviation safety experts, talk all things related to aviation and aerospace. This podcast and the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel are brought to you by the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, PAMA, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance and your one stop for all general aviation insurance needs. Get a customized quote at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Tell them you're a listener of the show and receive a 5% discount. Now it's time to buckle up, because it's wheels up for the latest episode of Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives, and it's kind of like deja vu, because for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, Flight Safety Detectives, you'll notice that it looks like John, Todd, and I are dressed the same as we were in the last show. Well, it's because we are. Given our travel schedules coming up and a special topic we're going to be talking about, we wanted to make sure that we got this show in the can before we all blast off to different parts of the country. So, yes, we are still dressed the same because we are recording this show back to back with one of our other shows. But, you know, that's production. That's schedules. That's life. So anyway, it's good to see you guys, as always. And we got a couple things to talk about. One big thing that I know is going to be near and dear to your heart, John. So we will get to it. But starting off, We had a number of accidents again this past week. As I've always said, my office is up here at Rocky Mountain Metropolitan Airport, the old Jefferson County or Jeffco Airport in Broomfield. And there was a training accident where we had a private rated pilot working on his commercial in a rented Cessna 172, was in the pattern doing some simulated engine out pattern work. Unfortunately, it was not the best of conditions. We had extremely high winds with numbers of reports of low level wind shear, and this pilot was doing these kinds of maneuvers solo. And apparently, and again, we're still waiting for the NTSB and the FAA to actually release anything, but from just the scuttlebutt around the office and what I know, it looks like the pilot got himself slow on the approach and ended up stall spinning the airplane just short of the runway. It was a very tragic event. And the question, of course, from an investigative standpoint and a safety standpoint is why? Where was the instructor? Where was the flight school? Did anybody know what the agenda was for this particular pilot and as far as flying maneuvers that particular day? And if the flight instructor didn't know what he was practicing or going to practice, was that action condoned given the weather and that kind of thing? So I will follow that very closely. As we get more information, I will definitely keep us updated and you updated, our audience. And then as I get more information, John and I and Todd will eventually dissect this, because that right there is just a few things that make this accident one of those that we can definitely learn some lessons from. But the topic at hand today is a famous mechanic that, of course, is near and dear to John's heart, because John's been around a very long time, since the days of the Wright brothers. And so he had a very personal connection to Charlie Taylor. And Charlie Taylor is a famous maintenance technician mechanic who ended up making a lot of history and in blazing the trail for maintenance technicians to this day. And so, John, I think that because you are the one that's best suited and because Charlie Taylor and what he means to the industry, what he had meant to the industry, and actually the start of flying and accident investigation, I think the story is best told by you.
All right. Well, Charlie Taylor went to the work for the Wright brothers in early 1902. So he was there before they even started flying. They were flying gliders, and he was building the gliders. He was running the bicycle shop, repairing the bicycles is what he was hired for. And he took over the shop because they were always down to North Carolina flying their gliders, experimenting with airfoil design. And so he ran the whole thing. And one interesting piece about that in the very beginning is they used to crash that glider on a pretty regular basis down there. And they would telegraph back to Ohio and tell them that they bent up the lower wing or whatever they broke. And Charlie Taylor would make the parts and ship them down there for the Wrights to install. And mind you, this is in the 1902, before Ford had an assembly line, before anybody else had an assembly line. So he was making parts that were at least damn close so that the Wrights could install them without more fiddling.
So standardized production, more or less.
Yes. And then as time moved into 2003, the Wrights.
No.
Yeah, 1903.
Thank you very much. 1903.
It's just the opposite. In 2000, we had all kinds of problems not calling it 2000, right? So human factors at work here.
That's right.
So in 1903, the Wright brothers were ready to move to powered flight, and they tried to buy an engine for the airplane. And nobody, and none of the engine manufacturers had what they wanted or had any interest in building it. So they turned to Charlie to build it. And he actually blazed a few trails here. And one of which, he made the crankcase out of aluminum, which was unheard of at the time. It was maybe even the first engine made out of aluminum. But even more importantly, he made the crankshaft from hand, from a block of steel.
Wow.
And in the 80s and 90s, a number of people tried to duplicate what Charlie did using the tools that they know we had available at the time, and they couldn't get it done.
Mm.
So it was interesting in the talent that he had using a drill press and grinders and chisels, and he made the crankshaft. And another more interesting piece of all of that is that the Wright brothers wanted an 8-horsepower engine. Charlie didn't think it was enough, so he built them a 12-horsepower engine, and that barely was enough.
Mm.
So he was part of it. And he was there for the plane crash in 1908 or 09 with the military crash. And it's also interesting that he wanted to fly, and the Wright brothers refused to teach him because they knew if they taught him how to fly, he'd be off flying and he wouldn't be turning wrenches for them.
Yeah, a little selfish motive there.
Yes, it was. They kept him there. And actually, he worked for some other famous flyers, including the coast-to-coast, the first successful coast-to-coast flight. And that was interesting, too, because that airplane crashed many times across the country, you know, crashed on landing, dinged up. They essentially followed the railroad tracks west from the East Coast west. Mm. And Charlie Taylor was in a boxcar with all kinds of supplies and tools. So they would crash the airplane and park the boxcar close by, and he'd make all the parts and go back and put them on the airplane. And a few days later, they'd go for the next leg. And that's the way they worked their way across the country.
Huh. That's a so great story.
Huh. It's crazy times back then. But he was unsung. I mean, nobody paid any attention to Charlie. He bounced around. He worked in the Second World War. He worked for a lot of military contractors on the West Coast. He moved to the West Coast, but I think it was because his wife had asthma or something. And so he moved out to the West Coast, leaving the Wright brothers after they set up their production facility. And and typical for most mechanics, he didn't get paid anywhere near what he was worth. And he was actually pretty well destitute in the 50s after the after the war. And it was the Aerospace Industries Association that actually paid for his retirement living in a home out there until he passed away.
Wow.
So it was an interesting career he started. He gave a lot to this industry, like many people do.
And then, you know, one of the things that that we're talking about, of course, describing Charlie Taylor's life, is what brought him to prominence. What made people wake up in the industry and realize this guy was somebody special?
Well, that started in long after he died. You know, when he died, he was buried in the portal of the Folded Wings, which there are a number of famous aviators out there in California. It's in Burbank, including Admiral Byrd, and I forget who else. There's about a dozen of them that are all pioneers in the beginning of aviation. But it really was a grassroots effort that was funneled through the Smithsonian initially. Mm-hmm. And then the FAA has stepped in to elevate Charlie Taylor's position for the maintainers of this country, you know. And now your AMP license has Charlie Taylor's picture on it instead of the Wright brothers' picture on it. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time coming to get them recognized. And maintainers now have, if you've got 50 years as a maintainer in aviation and with an unblemished record, you can earn the Charlie Taylor Award given by the FAA.
And you are a recipient of that award.
Yes, I am.
And which... we all tip our caps, and I have one follow-up question. You've been around long enough. Why do you only have one? Shouldn't you have two or three by now?
Oh, now I'm getting – now the two of you are going to gang up.
That's right. You know, I mean, dirt is thousands of years old, John. I mean, you should have multiple awards.
Yes.
Well, you know, the big thing is – and again, we've talked about this on the show – And that is that the maintenance guys of all around the world, like you said, are unsung heroes. They work in the shadows, they work in the hangars and that kind of stuff. If something good happens, it's because of the pilot. If something bad happens, it's typically because of the pilot. That's the way we look at accident investigations and saving the day and that kind of stuff. But you rarely hear about the maintenance technician. And you and I were together. We just gave another presentation about maintenance and the importance of really being plugged in as a maintenance technician in doing your work, or a director of maintenance in a maintenance facility or a business aviation flight department. And you guys don't really get the credit. But I've always preached it. If you don't fix it, I don't fly it. And there has to be a high level of trust, and in some cases, even tacit trust. But we always live by trust but verify. Because as much as I love you, and I know that you can turn a wrench and you're very skilled at what you do, I want to know what you did to my airplane. Because if something did happen, while you were working on it, you got distracted and you forgot to put the safety wire on it. I want to make sure that that bolt doesn't back out and cause me problems.
Yeah. You know, today we have a whole new generation of mechanics coming in, and we're losing a lot of the talent and the knowledge out the door. So that poses a whole other set of problems. You know, the airlines, surprisingly, the airlines through this pandemic did not furlough their mechanics in a wholesale manner like they did the pilots, because there just are not enough mechanics out there.
And speaking of that, John, and a lot of attention has been brought to this, quote, pilot shortage. But there is also a shortage of qualified maintenance technicians across the board, because there are a variety of different disciplines of maintenance technicians, and there's a shortage across the board.
Yes, especially a good wrench turner that has the skills in avionics and electronics. Those are very, very scarce individuals. And if you have one, you don't want to lose them.
And with the trade schools the way they are, I mean, there are a lot of people out there, both men and women, young men, young women, who, you know, college isn't for them, but they're good at, you know, doing other things. And that is, they have knowledge about electricity. So being an electrician or whatever, you know, maintenance technician. And you and I had the opportunity to meet several young ladies down at Embry-Riddle a year ago when we were down there doing our show, who are going into the maintenance side of the house. And they're very smart. We engaged them. They were on our show. They were very well versed with what they wanted to do and what they wanted to accomplish.
Well, just a few weeks ago, we had our maintenance skills competition. Todd and I were there. You were supposed to be there. You got sidetracked.
Yeah.
And we had not only had a whole bunch of young ladies, so something just short of 50, but we had several hundred students. And, you know, and one common theme that I heard from at least a half a dozen students was that when they were in high school and they indicated that they wanted to be a mechanic, an airplane mechanic, the discouraging that they got from the guidance counselors and other people telling them, no, you know, go to college and be a psychologist. Well, that doesn't get you much today.
Mm-hmm. And that speaks to what you were saying earlier about the life that Charlie Taylor lived, that he was unsung in the sense of the average person in society who's not in aviation. They hear about pilots, they hear about engineers, they hear about astronauts. Apollo 13, the movie, they heard about the controllers down in Mission Control. What do you see in popular culture that talks about the mechanics? Very, very little. Now, I'm not going to decry that. It's like, look, they're out there making a product and they want to focus on someone else, turning it back on the next generation coming out. As we spoke about in the previous show, people in aviation now are much more attuned with getting the word out on their own, sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly. So I look at this as an opportunity. The ones who are coming out, those young people who have been growing up in this social media world, put out your video about your life as a mechanic. Talk about what you're doing in a podcast. Don't be afraid to go out there and be front and center about it. And circling back a little bit to the aerospace maintenance competition, one of the more fascinating students I spoke to left high school, became an auto mechanic. And because she wanted to work with her hands and do that sort of thing. And then she had several years as a flight attendant. Now she's coming back as a maintenance professional. And I can't help but think that not only has this person understood what it is to work with their hands, work around machinery, to work around technology, they've also been in aviation in a very, very deep way. And they're bringing that insight, that knowledge into the maintenance side of the house. I can't imagine what sort of insights she's bringing to the table as a former flight attendant. But it's got to add to things and make it even better for the mechanic community as a whole to have that kind of diverse professional background in the maintenance field.
And I think, John, you know, one of the things that we typically have a connotation of is, well, you're just a mechanic. They don't make much money. But I happened to see a salary survey recently that was posted. I think it was on Facebook or something, where I was pretty impressed by the pay scale.
Well, today the airlines, the big guys, American, Southwest, United, for 40 hour week, after you've been a journeyman, so to speak, after you've been there a few years, is $100,000 in today's money. That's a wage that you can raise a family on.
Yeah. So we're talking from high school to six figures in 6 years from high school. In other words, without going to college, you can have better than a living wage, enough to support a family in virtually every major metropolitan area in this country, and to do before you turn 30.
And on top of that, and what people don't factor in is all of the benefits that go with that salary. Not only your typical health insurance and of course seniority and everything else like that, but you get flight benefits and everything else. And when you put dollar values to that, that's a pretty good wage because you're, you know, bumping probably 100.5 or more.
And speaking of dollar value, let's go back to college for a minute, or perhaps not go to college. It's fairly well understood that if you go to college, especially one that's not a publicly financed college, it's easy after 4 years having $40,000, $50,000, $100,000+ worth of debt. And there are some aviation professions, particularly as a professional pilot, where on top of your four-year degree, you might have another five or six-figure debt to pay off before you start day one in the profession. Yeah. And I would dare say that a professional pilot, the first few years of his or her career, is probably going to be making less than a mechanic in the first few years of his or her career. A mechanic who might start immediately at a major airline, where the pilot that's what they're doing.
The airlines today are trying to get the students right out of school for a couple of reasons. And I think one of the most important was they get to influence the culture of that individual. So no bad habits, that's an easy way to say it. But, you know, we had somewhere around 40 people that we know from the competition that have had interviews for jobs with airlines. I know one individual one carrier airline that if you were at the competition and they solicited you when they were all there, they solicited you, your interview was the final interview. They bypassed all this stuff in the front and you went right to final interview. The competition has been very good for the students, and that's why I do it. Right? I mean, it's aimed at the individuals trying to create opportunity. Airline, you know, aviation was great to me, given that where I grew up and where my friends all went, nowhere near where I went. Mm-hmm. So aviation was great to me, and it can be great to other people too. And you don't have to be the pilot. I mean, there's other jobs too. I mean, in the purchasing side, on the IT side.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much opportunity. I tell people, you know, they say, oh, I don't want to go into a shop for an airline. I don't want to do the same thing every day. Well, we had a shop at US Air in Pittsburgh where they overhauled 400 different components. You could come to work every day and work on something different and be in a shop environment inside nice and warm. I was outside in the winters and the rain and all the rest of it. All right. So, I mean, it's just so much to aviation, so much opportunity in aviation. And it makes me feel good to be able to help so many young people get out there. Todd and I both, and we're not through.
Yeah.
And we're mentioning aviation. I'd like to expand that to aerospace, because there has actually been at least one person who was at the competition a couple of years ago, who's not only in aerospace, but as you told us, John, closed the hatch on one of the last latest SpaceX flights with people in it.
Yes.
Just a few years ago, this person was a student. They're out there launching rocket ships.
Yeah, that's
there's a college cool. There's a college in technician, a maintenance school in Northern Florida, who was at the competition. Their entire graduating class that's graduating right now, the entire class, and the way they say it is they're going to space. They were all, every one of them was hired by the space program. In the next class, half of them have already been hired. So,
amazing.
You know, we see now Musk has opened up the space horizon. We got the other billionaires coming in right behind them. That whole launch business is going to break wide open here in the next few years. Yeah. And the FAA is going to have trouble keeping up with it.
And not only in space, but in the next few years, there might be some innovations in aviation. For example, I'm not sure what the term of art is for, the vertical taxis that are going to be semi-autonomous and electrically driven, where there's a whole series of technologies that have to come on board, have to be regulated, have to be maintained. And it will take a different mentality to maintain something that is so heavily dependent on computers and chips and electrical propulsion.
Yeah.
The opportunities are going to be out there.
And that's why a computer background, electrical background will be very valuable, because everything is turning to automation and AI and a bunch of other things. So, but for our audience who is both listening and watching us, you can tell that this is something that's very passionate for John, because you hear that little quiver in his voice. And that's not just because we got a lousy radio connection or microphone connection. It's because, John gets very emotional when he talks about these things. And believe me, I've been with John when he's been very emotional, and that happened during ValueJet. I had to get him to stop crying at the public hearing. So that's the passion he brings to this part of the industry. We should all, at least take a lesson from John about having passion. You know, you get into the aviation business, not for a job. You want a job, go flip hamburgers somewhere or do something else. But you get into aviation because it's passion, and you want to accomplish something, you want to contribute, you want to make aviation and aerospace better, and you have to bring it every single day. And trust me, I mean, the three of us have been in aviation a long time. And yeah, there are days when it's just like, man, I just need a day off. I don't really feel like doing something today. But because of what's deep inside, you go to work because you know you're going to make a difference. And turning a wrench is making a difference, because what you do and how you do it is the difference between success and failure for that airline, for that airplane, for that pilot, for that company, whoever's operating that aircraft. And your fingerprints are all over it. And you should be proud that when you've accomplished something and you've got that airplane flying, or you keep it flying, that every day you can take pride that when that airplane flies over your head, you can say, yeah, I turned a wrench on that airplane, and that's why it's flying today. So
this is a profession that you don't have to start at age 18. There are a lot of folks in the maintenance profession, aviation in general, who come about this early in their career, mid-career, not necessarily when they're teenagers. And the opportunities to do so are, depending on where you are, you might have government-sponsored, state-sponsored schools that aren't going to be free, but it'll be substantially cheaper than going to a commercial maintenance training organization. There are folks in the military who are in some sort of maintenance profession within the military. There is a process you have to go through to get certified to work on the civilian side. Same sort of process at some levels that all maintainers go through. You basically have to be certified by the FAA. There are tests you have to take, certain things you have to learn. But again, if you're in that space, either in technology or in military maintenance, or even in a completely different field, like one of the people in the competition, former flight attendants, more than one we saw there, former auto mechanics who go over to the aviation side, take the skill set you have, build on it.
Yep. And with that, I think the three of us all agree that it will be a happy birthday celebration for a guy who really was a trailblazer for the under the wing aspect of aviation and did so much to contribute. And that's why we celebrate his birthday. And that's why this show is being aired on his birthday, is to give him that honor. And encourage people to go forward, especially young people who, college may not be for them, but this is a very rewarding and lucrative career if you choose to work on aircraft and show your talent in that regard. So, Todd, as we wrap up this show, any parting thoughts?
Open up your eyes. Whether you're going to be a maintenance professional or not, open up your eyes to the fact that this is a part of aviation and aerospace. That's a key part of aerospace. If you haven't paid much attention to it before, spend at least a few minutes to pay attention to it now.
And John, as I always do, I leave you with our last words.
And I will continue to focus on the pilots with doing an adequate pre-flight. If you have any questions, get a mechanic to help you understand the pre-flight you're doing on the airplane, that type of airplane. If you're going to go flying, do a very thorough pre-planning session. The flight should start before you leave your hotel room or home and start thinking about flight, what's going on, the weather, beginning, end, and in the middle. So many times people just omit what's going on in the middle. And when you show up at the airplane, do a very thorough pre-flight, very thorough. If you go flying, put your head on a swivel, keep that head moving, see and avoid, and please fly safely.
To listen or watch more episodes of this show, go to FlightSafetyDetectives.com, the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel, or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. To contact John and Greg about the show, send them an email at FlightSafetyDetectives@gmail.com. And remember, for aviation insurance needs, contact Avemco Insurance at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Mention Flight Safety Detectives and receive a 5% discount. Thanks for listening to the Flight Safety Detectives, and remember to always fly safe.